Make sure we all button up on 220, right? All right, Russ is going to do step five, or whatever he wants to talk about tonight, right?
Something, we'll talk about something.
I think step five will be in there somewhere, you know. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And it's a pleasure to be here with you guys and in this step series that I've been privileged to be asked to do. It just really is a privilege. I have a great time doing this and meeting new people, and I love seeing new people. And I appreciate some of the people that actually came back. You know, it's always a miracle when they come back. And I haven't found necessary to take a drink. I'm from the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're down south about, what are we, about 58, 60 miles down south. And we have a lot of fun driving up here in the car and talking with my AA buddies. And I haven't found necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981. And it's not a record in AA. My sponsor has something like 56 years, but it's a record for me, so it's a good deal. And I want to talk a little bit about my experience and some of the things I've seen and learned, and I unfortunately do have opinions. You know, after you've been doing this for a little over 31 years, and I don't know how many men I've worked with, hundreds, and sponsored a large amount. I learned from my own experiences, I learned from watching other people, I learned from talking to people, and it's very hard not to develop some opinions about things, but I can assure you that my opinions are based upon my experience. And like my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, told me, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. So I'm an alcoholic, which means that I'm a born bullshit artist. And nobody believes my bullshit more than me. And so I'm used to sitting in bars and pontificating and talking about things I know nothing about, but expressing my opinion about them. So if you're an alcoholic, that tends to be part of the trait of being an alcoholic. We talked about that last week, about authenticity. But, you know, at these prices, you know, it isn't worthwhile to... You know, one of the things that happens when you come to a podium like this, I don't know, it's some sort of magical thing, is it's very hard to do this kind of stuff if you're making it up as you go along. If you're just taking it out of thin air, you know what I mean? It's very hard to do the alky barroom thing from this podium. It's something about alcoholics, they have that inherent ability to recognize phonies a mile away. So, and they also have an incredible ability to recognize the genuine article. Or authenticity. I think that's what the magic is about our stories. It says our stories disclose in a general way. Because the truth is, no matter how deluded an alcoholic is, and we are all deluded, aren't we? You know, I don't put my, you know, it says, listen, I just go by our basic text. It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our problems. I mean, that's it. If you're in here, if you're not, are there any alcoholics in here? Am I the only one? Okay, all you guys are in AA. You're all alcoholics. It says, this is our basic text. This is what we all agree. I don't care what you think. You know, this is what this book says. It says, you're selfish. You're self-centered, you're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. You step on the toes of others and they retaliate. You know, usually you don't think you... And usually your self will run riot, though you usually don't think so. Above all, you must get rid of this selfishness. Only God makes that possible. I don't care what you... This is what the book... I don't know what fellowship you're in. I'm in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the basic text. This is what we agree with. You know, I mean, I can understand if you come in here, you may not like it. You may not agree with it. You may think it's all wrong. I'm just telling you what the textbook says. I'm not making this stuff up. This isn't Russell's decide to come up with a theory. You know, I mean, you know, this is the stuff I learned over 31 years that works. And the guys that basically finally submit and surrender this stuff, you know, get this deal. And they get the results of what comes from getting this deal. You know, that rocket ship, what does it say? Experienced much of heaven and been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Which is more than just, you know, hanging in there, having had a drink, you know, it's something else. It's that freedom deal. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about this book and my experience and how does that key into the fifth step. I always like to try to give things that are a little bit, maybe a little bit different, you know, than what you ordinarily hear at a meeting, at a step meeting, the fifth step meeting. I try a little bit, you know, maybe come at it from a different angle, you know, an angle you've never heard of before. You know, so that you can walk out of here and say, man, I never heard that deal before. You know, I never heard it expressed that way. You know, so if you just walk out, even if it bugs the crap out of you, you know, it's a, you know, like the old saying, one of my buddies says, you know, when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that's hit. Or, whenever you disturb them, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So, you know, I mean, really, one of the best goals I have is just to disturb you. Because if I disturb you, I mean, if you're an alcoholic, I know if I disturb you, if you resent me, if you're upset with me, that means you're mine. I won. I won, you know? I'm an alcoholic. I know what it means when a speaker disturbs you. It means weeks and nights and days of restless sleep. It means going over that speech in my mind. Why did he say this? Who does he think he is? It means the guy occupying and preoccupying my mind. It means my going nuts. It means talking about the guy behind his back and saying bad things. And then it means ultimately drinking or going to a sponsor, having the sponsor, you know, sort of spank me a little, do a step, trying to figure out why the guy bothers me, then finally get down to why it bothers me, seeing some sort of truth in myself and say, that's why it is. You know, that guy's right. I am a jerk. You know, and I mean, I did do that. And then all of a sudden, you know, coming up with a new perspective. That's how we get a new perspective according to 12 and 12. Because our perspectives are all screwed up. It says by 100 forms, by numerous forms of, you know, we have to be crushed. That's how we get it. It says the new perspective is done by repeated humiliations, which means more than one humiliation, the final question of our self-sufficiency. So you're either going to get humiliated in here or humiliated with a sponsor or humiliated out there. You understand what I'm saying? Because if you spend your time in AA ducking old-timers and ducking people that are going to tell you the truth, even if it hurts your feelings, trust me, you will get the truth. It'll just be in jail. You know, listen, you'll get the truth, it'll just be in bankruptcy court. You'll get the truth, it'll be when you serve with divorce papers. You'll get the truth. I mean, you won't avoid the truth. You know, the truth will hit you. You're just either going to get it through a sponsor, you know, some sort of A spanking, or hear somebody you don't like, or something you don't like, but you will get the truth. The truth will out. Will out. You know, I fought the world, and the world won. You know, it's a big world out there. It's pretty rough out there, you know, and you're not going to avoid that deal. You know, so that's the deal. So I'm going to read a couple of things from the big book, which will start us off on our road. You know, the big book says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. They're restless, irritable, and discontented. Sober. You get that? You think sober is good. No. Sober is bad. If you're an alcoholic, sober ain't good. You know. Well, that sounds... I know I say that to get your attention. You know what I mean? Because we celebrate sobriety. But for an alcoholic, it's an unnatural state. It's bad. You know what I mean? I mean, it is. I mean, I'm just reading from the book. It says if you're sober and you're an alcoholic, you're naturally restless, irritable, and discontented. You know, unless you... I mean, how many people have been sober for a while? Over 3 or 4 months, okay? Well, did you ever, you know, think about... You ever say to yourself something like this? Now I know why I drank. That's why sober is bad, you know what I mean? If you stay sober long enough, you will come to a realization why you drank, okay? It'll be clear to you. It won't be, if you're drinking, it won't be clear to you. No. If you're drinking, it will not be clear to you what your disease is all about. As a matter of fact, you won't even experience the disease of alcoholism if you're drinking. All you'll because what alcohol does is it cures alcoholism. That's why we drink, because alcohol is the best stuff out there to stop alcoholism in its tracks, you see? No woman, no car, no amount of money, no new suit of clothes, and all those work to a certain extent, but none of those things work quite as well as just a few drinks. You know, alcoholism could be 5 miles away, and you know, it rears its ugly head, and I don't know what's alcoholism, I just say, I need a drink. I don't know, I just need a drink. And I need a drink because I'm sober, because I'm sober. You understand what I'm saying? I'm sober, and here's the problem. I'm breathing, and I'm on the planet. Now, I understand if people just don't screw with me, as long as people don't screw with me, you know what I mean? As long as everything's going to be okay, I'll be okay. I get that, you know? Now, I'm 63. We've probably got some 63-year-olds and 70-year-olds and 40-year-olds. And, you know, have you figured out how to do that thing so that the world doesn't screw with you? How's that been working for you? Just, you're going to be okay as long as nobody screws with you, you know? As long as you can control rush hour traffic, your boss, you know, money, the entire world situation, whatever's going on in Beirut, you know what I mean? How is that working? Your family, your mother, your father, the kids, you know, that guy you sponsor, how's that? It's a loser, right? So that ain't never going to happen. You know why? Because if you're an alcoholic, you can't manage your own life. I'm not making this crap up. They read it at every meeting. I mean, I know you don't hear it because then you go out and you start trying to figure out how to manage your life. You figure that'll protect you, and then it all falls apart and you're sucking your thumb and stuff like that. No, if you're an alcoholic, you can't manage your own life. You can't. You can't do it. No human power could relieve your alcoholism. Only God could and would if he was sought. That's it. Only through seeking God. Which sounds kind of crazy because I am hair-trigger predisposed to manage my life. You know, the way my thinking is, because it says my alcoholic's thinking seems normal to me. And my alcoholic thinking is that I can win the game through my incredible intellect. I am so smart, I know so much, you know, that if I can just figure this, I can figure out how to play this guy, I can figure out what to say to that guy, I can figure out what email to send, I can figure out what job to get, I can figure out how to put all that stuff together, and then I'll be okay, and it never works. It doesn't work. And it was a very frustrating experience. You know, you do the same thing over and over again, get different results. So I was, when I got sober in, what, January, and I had a sponsor named Bob Sullivan, wonderful sponsors. And, you know, wonderful sponsors and old-timers always introduce you. It says, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And they always introduce you to other people, other mentors. And through Bob, I met other men. Ultimately, I was mentored by Ray O'Keefe, who's another wonderful guy who helped me out a lot. And then my second sponsor was Joe Snyder, who had many, many years to Brian. He's a wonderful guy. And I remember my first Thanksgiving sober. Joe said to me, he said, we're a bunch of young, I got whatever I had, 9 months, 10 months, I was sober. We had a bunch of youngsters around the table. I don't know how old I was, I mean 32, something like that. And he said, you know, he says, what do you guys think sobriety? Give me one word what you think sobriety is about. And you know, I think I said serenity, and somebody said something else. And he said, you're all wrong. He says, you're all wrong. You know, old timers can say crap like that, you know? I don't know. They say, you're wrong, you know. I said, okay, so. So I said, it's about freedom. It's about freedom. And you know, I'm sure I had no idea what he was talking about. I probably thought it was like freedom from booze, which it is. And but I hadn't yet realized a new freedom. You know, they say you're going to know a new freedom and a new, you know, they say in the promises you're going to know a new freedom. Did you know that? And a new happiness. Now, some of you think you know what freedom is, but you wouldn't know what it is because you don't know about the new freedom. You only know about the old freedom. You don't know about the. You don't know what you don't know. You understand? You just don't know what you don't know, and you don't know about the new freedom until you get the new freedom. So I want to discuss a little bit about the new freedom, which really has to do with the fifth step, and the reasons why we do this fifth step, and what's that all about? You know, what's it about? Because the point is, if we're not restless, irritable, and discontented, if we're not upsettable, you know, like my sponsor used to, you know, that I told you that line my sponsor used to say to me. I was 9 years sober. You fast forward 9 years, and that same guy, Joe Snyder, is I'm complaining about my wife because they never forget. You know, forget you can't control the wives. You know, at least I couldn't. I could never figure out how to. You can't control the women, guys. Forget that. You can't control them. I sponsor a lot of guys that are sucking on the muzzle of a gun because they just can't control the woman. They just don't understand them. They can't control them. You know, and so they're a force of nature. They're a force of nature. Don't even worry about it. You just got to stay out of their way and give them whatever they want. Trust me, I've been married 31 years. You know, for an alcoholic, that's a big deal. To be married 31 years and have 4 kids and 6 grandkids and they're crazy about you. You know what I mean? And not only are they crazy about you, they're crazy. Whether you're there or not, they're crazy and crazy about you. You know what I mean? So I figured out the secret. Just say yes all the time. Say you're wrong all the time. You're right and say, you know, and plead guilty and just say, what's the fine? Don't even go to the trial. You know what I mean? The fine is always like dinner or a blouse. You know, you can always afford the fine. Just don't get into the trial. You understand what I'm saying? So I'm talking to Joe. Just don't get into it, you know. Well, the gals know. They understand, you know. They're looking for that guy, you know. And then, you know, except the sick ones who are looking for the ones that they want to have a fight with. But in any event, so so I'm talking to Joe about my wife. And because she was misbehaving. She was, what do they call it now, dissing me. She was disrespecting me. She was misbehaving. She was probably spending money. Maybe she I don't know. She wasn't listening to me. I don't know. And she didn't recognize me as the supreme authority, and so I gave him a 15-minute disagreement. Well, she belongs to Al-Anon, you know, our ladies of perpetual revenge. So I gave him a... You know what an Al-Anon 10-step is, don't you? An Al-Anon 10-step, when I'm wrong, she promptly admits it, you know? So, you know, one of them gals around there. So the bottom line is it's very great. It's good to have a wife like that, because that's one of the things, having a wife. And by the way, I've got three daughters that are like clones, you know what I mean? She's like trained them, you know what I mean? There's some sort of school by the CIA. She's trained them. They're like monsters. But you see, what you have to realize is what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, I can't, this is a whole other theory we'll get into on the sixth step and the seventh step, but as they're pounding me and they're killing me, I'm forming that sword, you know what I mean? They're just pounding me, but the bottom line is it's working. Because you know something, I can't drink. And I love the Lord, I believe in God, I got to look at Him whenever things are rough. And somehow I keep on looking at Him, I keep on talking to my sponsor, I keep on reading the book and doing the steps as they're pounding the hell out of me mercifully, and somehow I come out the other end and all of a sudden I don't even realize they're pounding me, it doesn't feel so bad. And I feel pretty good about the whole thing. And you want to know something? After the pounding doesn't work and I survive that pounding, you know something? I notice that the pounding out there doesn't work either. You know, I survived the pounding in here, I survived the pounding with them and everything, the next thing you know, the world has no effect on me. I'm not affected by the world. I'm not running around saying, I'll show them. They don't know who they're dealing with. Who the hell they think they are. Why is this always happening to me? I can't believe it's happening again. You know, I'm not doing that alky stuff, which tends to make you restless, irritable, discontented, and tends to make you feel sorry for yourself, so you become a thumb-sucking crybaby, and then ultimately maybe you drink, or maybe you just, even worse than that, you stay sober, but you just hang it in there, you know what I mean? Because life is a bitch, and you don't have that freedom, because what you have is you're suffering from alcoholism, and it's pure alcoholism, but you haven't gotten what they have in the book, you haven't experienced much of heaven, and you're not rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, of which you had not even dreamed. And you see these guys every once in a while walking around, and it's almost like they're wearing the world like a loose garment. And you know, you're an AA, and they're an AA, and you're doing the steps, and they're doing the steps, but they're like, you know, like Tiger Woods, they're playing a different game. There's a different game going on, and you can't even figure out what the hell's going on, because life is just so damn tough. So you figure they must have millions of dollars, or they must have a wife that really understands them, whatever the hell it is. You think they have some sort of material thing, but you don't understand it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with an inside job where God has changed them. He has done for them what they could not do for themselves because they surrendered. Because they surrendered and you haven't. And so you will never get this thing. The most you'll ever have is mere sobriety. You'll never get emotional sobriety, which Bill Wilson said the problem with us, the real problem is unhealthy dependency. Because for you, it'll always be about the weather, or about the girl, or about the boy, or about the job, or about the marriage, or about the car, or about the money, or about the check. It'll always be about the circumstances. If the circumstances are good, you may be good, maybe not. If the circumstances are bad, you're lousy. You'll never be able to handle this world in any type of decent way because you're so trapped and in bondage with this deal, and with bondage of the shame of being an idiot. Because what you don't realize is no matter what you pull out there, whatever you show out there, deep down inside you feel like you're a piece of shit. And you don't even know what that's about. You don't even know how to get rid of that. You know, sometimes in the shower you're lathering up and you call yourself an asshole and you say, I don't deserve to live and I wish I was dead and I'll never get this thing. You know, you're always talking to yourself about how shitty you are and what a piece of crap you are in between the times you tell yourself that you're wonderful. And you can't even figure out where that voice is coming from or why you're saying that stuff to you. And you're under the crazy opinion that you don't think that stuff doesn't affect you. Whenever you tell yourself you're a piece of crap, whenever you tell yourself whenever you talk like you're ashamed of yourself, what you're telling yourself is this is your reputation about you with you. This is what you really think about you. And you spend your entire life trying to figure out how not to make sure nobody else sees you for who you really know you are, a worthless piece of crap. That's why we drink, and that's why when people say, does anybody have a question, we don't raise our hands. Because what if it's a stupid question, we get laughed at. And that's why when goofy people in AA say things to us like, don't talk about God or don't do this, that's why we cower in a corner, because we don't want to be laughed at. That's why we don't want to talk about God or any of that stuff, because we may be humiliated. And the last thing we want to do, because we're approval junkies, we don't want anybody laughing at us. We want to make sure everybody likes us. That's why we stay up all night sucking our thumb, because we hear that one guy at work said something bad about us 6 years ago. That's why we can't handle life. How can you be an adult? If you're an adult and you're going through life, you know what I mean? If you ain't being criticized, you're worthless. Man, if I don't have at least 30% of the room hating my guts, I haven't said anything. You know, I mean, you haven't said anything. And that, you know, we go through this deal, and it's all pure alcoholism, and you can't get rid of it. And you don't even get rid of it. You don't even know you got it. You don't even know it's a problem, because your alcoholic thinking seems the only normal one. This is just the way you are. Scared. And so I'm in Great Neck, New York, and I'm like a 12-year-old boy, and I'm back then when you're a 12-year-old boy, you know, the only thing they care about is whether or not you're good at sports. And I was always lousy at sports. I really was. It was terrible. Up to and including now. And I was good at school, but I was lousy at sports. And so they would be choosing up sides. And so most of you people have been through this deal where you're down in the baseball field and you got two captains. The captains are the guys who are really good, right? And then you got about 18 guys or 20 guys in the middle. And, you know, one guy says, well, I'll take Joe. You know, all these guys in the middle. He says, I'll take Joe. And so what does Joe do? Joe goes from the middle, goes over to where the captain is, right? He says, well, I'll take Steve, you know? And then Steve goes over to the middle. And I'm sitting there in this group of guys, which is getting smaller and smaller. You get the picture? And I'm praying. You know, I don't know whether I even believe in God or not, but I'm saying, please don't let me be last. I would pray to be second to last. For me to be second to last was like winning the Oscar. You know what I mean? Here's the deal. I just never wanted to be, I didn't want to be the one they hated the most. Because the one they hated the most, what happened is he's left alone there in the middle. It's a very humiliating experience. And what happens is they say things, it's the way they pick it, they say things like this, oh, do we have to have them? And then everybody sort of laughs. You know, it seems to me like I was picked last all the time. That's probably not true, but it seems that way, that I was picked last all the time. And I still remember what it felt like to be picked out. I'd be in the middle of the field and I'd want to die, I'd be humiliated, I'd want to cry and all that sort of stuff. But somehow, I don't even know where I got this from. It was just a natural reaction that I don't think, knowing a little bit about alcoholism now and how it works, you know, it probably wasn't unique to me. Of course, I thought nobody felt the way I did. Nobody felt fear the way I felt. Nobody felt, you know, injustice the way I felt injustice. You know what I mean? Nobody felt like me, had the feelings I had. But you know, what I would feel at that time is, as scared as I was, as much as I wanted to die, as much as I wanted to kill them, as embarrassed as I was, I somehow knew that if I sort of cried in front of them or let them see what was really going on, that something horrible would happen to me. And I somehow knew that the only way I could protect myself was act as if it didn't bother me. In other words, the only way I could protect myself is act completely opposite of the way I felt. And I had this incredible urge to make sure that they could not possibly see what was going on inside of me. And it was a natural thing. I didn't have to go to a psychiatrist for this. I didn't have to take a pill for this. It was a natural thing. Just acting so that they would not see how badly I felt. And you know, I would laugh when they were laughing at me, like I was laughing at me, like I was sitting where they were. You understand what I'm saying? Laughing at me, you know, and that's it. And how did I know that protective little wall that I built up there, that sort of like spiritual, you know, that sort of wall, wherever that comes from, how did I know that over the years, that would promulgate itself over and over again in different situations, in classroom, in recess, and get thicker and thicker and thicker. So by the time I was 16, 17, and 18, it was about 4 feet thick. And nobody was ever going to find out who I was. And nobody was ever going to see who I was. And you know what the real serious, crazy thing about that? It got to the point where I didn't even know who I was. How could I possibly? I didn't even know what I felt. I didn't even know what was going on. And all I know is every once in a while, I say to myself, you're a piece of shit. You don't deserve to live. You know, and then you got one part of your mind saying, I'm the greatest, I'm better than everybody, I'm smarter than, and other people say, you're a piece of crap. And that sets up, I don't know, some sort of weird sort of friction, you know, which scotch will actually help out for a while, you know. I've experimented with that deal. Booze will help that out, you know. So now you come in here, right? And they tell you to get rid of the only substance that stops you from blowing your brains out and says that'll be the cure. And the only thing, the whole life is now a bottle. And the reason it's a bottle is because you can't stand being sober. And now you got, and they're telling you that's the problem. And now you're not drinking, and now you get to deal with the baseball field. Now you get to deal with life on life's terms. You understand? So tell me, how do you do that deal? How do you do that deal? You know, I mean, I guess most kids learn how to do that deal at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. It's very hard to play catch up and learn how to do that deal when you're 27, when you're 35, and you got the emotions of a sick 3-year-old. That you'll be you've been dulling somehow with either food or candy or booze or love affairs or romance or whatever it is, and they want, and now you come in here and the sponsors, they want to take all that shit away from you. Well, not the candy at first. They say, yeah, eat as much as you want because they can't arrest you for driving while fat, you know what I mean? But they do want to take away the women, you know. They say, yeah, stay away from them gals, you know. Those gals are not the cure, you know. Yeah, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like, but, you know, it's, and that's the deal. And so one day, so how do you get rid of that wall? How do you get rid of that shame, you know what I mean? So one day, how do you get rid of that? That's a bondage. How can you feel free when you got that stuff going on? Do you think it affects the way you deal with people? Do you think it affects your relationships with people? Do you think it affects, you know, how you live your life? How you live, you don't even live your life, you know, because everything is filtered through what will they think about me? If I say this, what will they think about me? Or you go to a meeting, you talk, and you walk in and say, why did I say that? What do they think about me? And, you know, you suffer from that other alcoholic paranoia that you think they're actually thinking about you when they're thinking about them, you know what I mean? And you're sure they're thinking about you. And so everything you say and everything you do, it's all about me, 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 me. Why am I? What do they think about me? How do they think about me? And you know it's all bad. It's never good. And you feel, so how do you get, so that's alcoholism. That's the real alcoholism, because it says the booze is but a symptom. Doesn't it say that? That's not me, that's in the book. It says the real disease centers in our mind, not our body. That's where it centers. I'm talking about the disease of alcoholism. I'm talking about the thing that you guys have right now. I know you're not drinking. I know you're coming up here. Oh, I didn't drink for you. Oh, we're going to give you a medallion. You didn't drink for 5 years. I mean, it's all good stuff. You know, you didn't drink, but you're all still nuts, right? You still got that alky crap, right? I mean, I'm not talking here to people who are saying, what is this guy talking about? You know, I mean, if I was like in the Kiwanis Club, I understand if I was in the Kiwanis Club, they'd be looking at me strange and say, what's this guy talking about? You know what I mean? Non-alkies would say, I don't assume this guy's talking. But alcoholics, they're like staring saying, this guy's talking. They come up to me after me, you know what they say? You were talking about me. And then some other guy comes up and he says, you were talking about me. And then some other guy says, well, I can't be talking about all of you, but I am. Why? Because it's all true. And you know, and this little stuff I covered just now, that's like one sliver of your alcoholism. One sliver of your alcoholism. And guess this, here's the cool part. You don't even see it. And there's only 10,000 other feelings and emotions that go along with that you don't even know about. That you might be able to find out, maybe over a period of 31 years, I've seen, you know, I started out seeing the alcohol. Now I'm up to, I don't know, lust, maybe. I don't know what it is. I mean, 1,000, you know, what does it say? Old ideas, get rid of our old ideas, but the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. What does that mean, let go, old ideas? You think the only old idea you got to let go is not drinking? We have experienced much of heaven. We've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. I don't know. I think they're talking about more than just not drinking. What do you think? I've been around here. I've sponsored guys. I've seen guys that are not drinking who are basket cases. They get married. They have kids. They're basket cases. They're even worse sober. At least when they were drinking and going down the tubes, you know what I mean? You could talk to them. They're going to actually admit they have a problem. Now they want to wrestle with you. You don't understand. I'm different. If only. Yes, but. You know? They want to wrestle with you. They don't even want to admit that they have a problem. The problem is their wife. The problem is their work. The problem is their brain. The problem is they're not even sober. They're not even emotionally sober because they haven't locked a hold of this thing because they're not willing to surrender. And they get to hang around with a lot of other people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are also not willing to surrender. So they get a lot of buddies, just like we had buddies in the bar that said your wife's a bitch. You know when you go to the bar and you're an idiot because you should be home with your wife and you turn to the guy sitting next to you to get his opinion? You know, my wife's a bitch, you know, she wants me to come home. What do you get? You get another guy who says, oh, your wife's a bitch, you're going okay, you're a great guy, right? And you surround yourself with a bunch of people that tell you how wonderful you are and what a bitch your wife is. And you end up getting divorced 17 times. You don't understand what the problem is because you know it isn't you because you and your buddies have determined they're bitches and you're okay. Every once in a while, you run into a guy who says, why don't you grow up? But you cross that sucker off the list because he's some born-again Christian stupid guy. You don't want to hang around him. You know what I mean? Because he's not nice and love and tolerance is our code, you know? Well, you know, all those guys in the bars that were telling you that your wife was a bitch and everything like that? They're all here now. Yeah, they came over. They followed you. They followed you over here. They're hanging out. You can find them. They're out in the parking lot. They're smoking, talking about girls and toga parties and whatever the hell you guys are talking about up here. You know, and there's one guy, you know, out there who's not talking about this stuff, but nobody wants to hang around him, you know. He doesn't want to have any fun. He just wants to talk about God. And we know we can't talk about that at AA meetings, okay? So what's the deal? So I get a call. I'm on the relay. The relay, you know, the relay, they have relays up here. You know, I was every Friday night, if you called up Alcoholics Anonymous, between 11 o'clock at night and 8 in the morning, on a Friday night till 8 o'clock Saturday morning, you got me. For 8 years. Because I couldn't give the job away. That's a whole other story, you know. But 8 years. That's why nobody in Dade County got sober during that 8-year period. But I stayed sober. Isn't that cool? So a guy calls me up at 11 o'clock at night. He's on the phone. And he says, look, I've been sober for a year. And I feel like I want to kill myself. I don't know what's going on. You know, the whole thing, you know, he's going nuts. Whatever the heck it is. So what I would do is I would try to, if there was a meeting available, I'd try to get him to a meeting. And so... You know, so I say to him, after I establish that he's crazy, that he's nuts, that he's, you know, I'm trying to help him, he wants help, he's calling me from a payphone. I realized that at the call room, my room, in Coral Gables, he's in Coral Gables, I said, where are you? He says, I'm Coral Gables. I said, I realized that my room has a meeting that ends at 11 o'clock, and he's calling me at 11 o'clock. And that if I can get him at the call room, there's still people over there he can talk to. So I said, listen, I got something you can do. He says, what room are you a member of? He says, I'm a member of the Carl Gables group. He says, great. There's a meeting that just ended at the Carl Gables group just now. If you go up there, there are people there you can talk to. He says, I know. He says, I'm at the meeting. He was calling from a payphone. He called Alcoholics Anonymous from a payphone at the meeting because he didn't want to go up and talk to anybody there. He was scared to talk to somebody. So what's that about? What's that about when you're dying and you're scared to go up? What's that about? You know, that's the disease of alcoholism. That's what we got. So let me read you a couple things, okay, real fast. And, you know, let's see whether we can figure this thing out. Because I think you guys are, I think this is the way, you know, listen. I'm not going to tell you this is what you do or how to do it. I mean, you got a book here and everything like that. You got sponsors, okay? I'm going to give you a little stuff to think about. You know, you understand? And, you know, and I think the ones that want it will figure it out. I've always been amazed that the ones that don't really want it, they fall by the wayside, they die, they, you know, it's like a self-cleaning oven in here. Every 2 years, the bullshit burns off anyway, so it doesn't matter. That's a good thing. You wouldn't want it sticking around here, believe me. It'd be a bad. It's good. It burns off, it comes back, it burns off, it comes back. This time I'll do it differently. Ultimately, some of them come back and they do it, you know what I mean? But it's the booze. The booze is our best friend. If it wasn't for booze, we'd have to invent it just to clean out the rooms, you know what I mean? You know. So the bottom line is that I want to read this stuff to you, you know, and the ones that want it, they get it. I don't know how it is. They get it. They get it without listening to me. I can't understand that. They get it without, the ones that want this more than anything else, I guess that's the way it's been, they get it. And the ones that don't want it walk out of the room and say, I don't understand what he's talking about. You know, they don't want it. They don't want it anyway, because you see, you got to want what we have and be willing to go to any lengths to get it. Then you're ready to take the steps. You can do all the steps till the cows come home. If you don't want what we have and you're not willing to go to any length to get it, it ain't going to matter. You know, all you're doing is you're just doing jail time. You're just doing stuff to do stuff, but your heart's not in it. You understand? Because this whole thing is about God and your relationship with God. If you seek Him, it says, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass to you and countless others. If we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. You know, being all powerful will give us anything we need if we stay close to Him and do His and perform His works. That's what the entire book is about, that and nothing else. And to the extent that you go after worldly clamors and you think it's about something else, you're going to be out in the desert somewhere. You know, and believe me, there's plenty of people that'll tell you that it's all a bunch of crap. You know, even though it's all throughout the book, because the fact of the matter is, they want you to believe it's a bunch of crap, because if you don't think it's a bunch of crap, then you may start doing it, and then they may have to do it, and they don't want to do it. You understand? They don't want it. Bill Wilson didn't even want to do it. Even after he said, the Lord has been so wonderful in me, curing me of this terrible disease, I had to keep talking about it and telling other people. Even a few months after he said that, he was with Henrietta Seiberling, and he said this, and this is in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. You know, and I've read you guys this before. This is classic alcoholic. In the early days, she recalled, Henrietta, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. That's what he said. That's what Bill Wilson said. You know why? You know why? This is the same guy who saw the white light experience, you know, did the whole thing with the guy. Now he said, I don't think we should talk so much about that. You know what happened? Somebody laughed at him. You know the guy in the room who says, we don't talk about that crap. Don't talk about God. We don't talk about God. You know that guy who's intimidating you? Who's making you feel guilty for talking about God or reading the book or saying that? You know that guy? Bill Wilson met him. You know what happened? Bill Wilson started sucking his thumb and crying. Because alcoholics have that effect on people. Alcoholics make people feel like pieces of crap. They make people feel guilty. We have that genius. We make people feel crappy. That's why there's this huge fellowship out there called Al-Anon, with millions of people that join it, and they have conventions, and they have one common denominator. They know us. They've like met us, they've married us or something, you know? And all of a sudden, they marry us, they meet us, and now they got a disease. Because no matter how drunk we get, no matter how crazy we get, we got 15 of them hovering around us saying, what should I do to help them, whatever, and somehow we have the knack of making them feel guilty for the crap we do if they don't fix it up. Now, I don't know, it's a genius. So if you're going to be hanging around alcoholics, you better realize that there are going to be some of them that are going to make you feel really good. They're going to be balcony people, they're going to make you feel really good, and there are going to be some of them that are going to make you feel really bad. You better realize in the same room there are going to be people that are going to bring you up, and there are going to be people that are going to drag you down. But here's the good news. You're the one who's in charge of who you hang around. You're the one who's in charge of who. So you want to know what's going on in your life and why you feel the way you are? You look at your friends and look at who you're hanging around. It's your responsibility. There's plenty of people in here that are doing this thing the way it's supposed to be done. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. I said to him, we all need a lot of Henriettas. Well, we're not here to please alcoholics. They have been pleasing themselves all these years. We are out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be in the Rotary Club or something like that. Because God is your only source of power. Finally, he agreed. You know, if he didn't agree, we'd all be drunk tonight. You know, if Henrietta wasn't around, we'd be drunk on tonight. So let me read you a couple things real fast. I think you'll get the picture. Okay, you ready? I'm just going to whip through this. I'm leaving out about 100 things. I'm going to read about 10, okay? We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. Nothing less. Nothing less than this. Not less than this. You know, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today. I'll tell you, you want to know what the central fact of your life today is? I'll tell you what the central fact is. It's what you think about. If you don't think about God all the time, and I'm not saying I think about him all the time. I'm not saying I don't go to work. I'm not saying I don't say, let me have a cheeseburger or something like that. But if it's not the predominant fact, the central fact in your life, it's not something that you're completely thinking about, you're absorbed about, when you're not, you know, when you're not flushing the toilet or something, you know, when you're not doing something, if it's not the predominant fact in your life, then you want something, then it's not the central fact of your life today. If you're thinking about work all the time, if you're thinking about money all the time, if you're thinking about girls all the time or getting laid all the time or boys or whatever it is, if you're thinking about that, then that's the central fact of your life. And that's why you feel so crappy. Because that's been the central fact of your life for your entire life. And that's what got you in here and you're still doing it. Because you just won't let that go. Because you just won't let that go. And you haven't even read the book. And if you read it, you've ignored what they're saying. Because it's this and nothing less. And they didn't apologize for it. There's no apology for that. They don't feel bad because they're telling you that. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could not do by ourselves. Next, this is on page 28. We in turn took the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. A relationship with a living Creator. In my words, you got a problem with it, you need to write New York. Tell them to change it. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God, the way he established a relationship with God. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of our troubles, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-overrun riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of self. We must, or it kills us. There also seems no way of getting entirely rid of self without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore. Do the next right thing, whatever it is. Good orderly direction, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. We had to have God's help. And the next thing it says, this is how I don't lie about it. We had to quit playing God. How do you play God? Well, let me tell you something. I mean, you know, I almost hate to say it because I know there are people that are doing it. You know, it's nice to say good orderly direction. Who's in charge of good orderly direction? If you don't have God, if you're not focused on God, you're the one who decides what good orderly direction is. You're the one who's deciding what's good orderly. You're deciding whether to turn over the money or not turn over the money. You're the one who's deciding that. We had to playing God. I mean, it's clear what they're talking about. If when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well, which means we got to figure out what his work is. Isn't that? I mean, what are they talking? Is this all gibberish? I mean, we read this stuff. We read this entire book, and then we go out, and we think that this program is about acceptance is the answer to all our problems. It's not. Faith is the answer, number one. If acceptance was the answer to all our problems, I mean, it's a nice saying. It's the answer to a lot of things, but you know what I mean? If that was the whole deal, you understand, we'd have a matchbook cover. We wouldn't even have a big book. We'd have one line. We'd have a bumper sticker. It's clear what this book is talking about. Let's keep on going, okay? Right here. Perhaps there is a better way. I'm reading out of the big book. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in a world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent as we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us and what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. There are many people here that be fearful their entire life about everything because they're not willing to trust in God. They're trusting in their own power and their own intellect, and it'll never work because we're powerless. We had to find a power greater ourselves, which that's why we had to talk about God. That's what the program's about. This is on page 98. The minute we put our word, this is when you're talking to a newcomer. You know how people say, don't talk to a newcomer about God? Scare him away or something? And maybe, I don't know, this is what it says. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our senses rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. He's the central factor of our lives. Burn the idea. Burn. Sounds pretty strong to me. You think I'm strong? Why do I keep repeating this stuff? Why do I keep on saying this stuff? Why is every meeting I give exactly the same stuff? You know why? Because where I come from in my group, you burn the idea. You burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is he trusts in God and clean house. So you may turn your back on it, but you won't be able to forget it. You know, and so when you wind up in jail and you wind up in this, one day you'll look back and you'll say, I remember that guy, I hated him, what he said. I've never tried that deal. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Hey, I don't know about you, but I see a pattern. I see a pattern. I'm not making this stuff up. So why is this important? Why does this have to do with the fifth step? Because every single step you do is not about making you smarter. It's not about making you more intelligent. It's not about getting you emotionally fit, because the emotional fit follows God. God is doing for you what you can. What you do for yourself is worthless. What he does for you is miraculous. What you do for yourself is worthless. What he can do for you is miraculous. The power to have his power in your life is miraculous. So what does this have to do with fifth step? Well, as long as you understand that every step in here is designed to strip away the obstacles to them and strip away the obstacles of the sunlight and the spirit so that you can have a better relationship. The whole point of the steps is so that you can have a relationship with God. To do the steps and not have a relationship with a living creator is to have nothing except near sobriety, which is why we end up on step 11. That's why you ever notice how the steps end up where? On step 11. Where now that we have a relationship, what do? What do we spend the rest on? Trying to improve that relationship. So you don't think the fifth step, what do you think the fifth step has to do with? You think that you've been seeing a psychiatrist has to do with a mental thing? Well, you ought to read the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This is in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, in the part where it talks about the fifth step. This is in Into Action. This is the first paragraph in Into Action on the fifth step. First paragraph. Okay? Because I want to say something. This stuff isn't hidden. This stuff is clear as a bell. And the only people that don't see it are alcoholics who have bought into the crap that this is some sort of mental health program and that we don't talk about God, because they're not reading the book, or they don't want to read the book, or they don't want to see what's plain and clear in the book for people who want to be constitutionally honest with themselves. Now, if you're constitutionally dishonest with yourself, if you want to be dishonest and just tell yourself you're doing AA when you're doing AA light, understand, and make believe you're doing AA because you really don't want to do AA, and just congregate around the rooms, you understand what I'm saying, and have a good time and smoke and joke and go to the parties and think that you're doing AA because you're picking up a medallion, and all of a sudden you realize that you haven't seen any of this stuff. You're not doing any of this stuff. It wasn't clear to you. I'm just going to make, listen, at least one guy in AA is going to make this thing clear. And you are absolutely free to disregard everything I say. I mean, really, you are. You're grown-ups. You know, I'm not telling you how to... I'm just doing what I'm paid for. They tell me to come in, they say, tell me my story, do my thing. I'm not going to water it down for you. I'm going to tell you the deal. Here's what it says. You can check it out. Check it out. See whether I'm just changing the words. This is step five. This is why we do step five. They tell us why we do it. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've done the fourth step, now the fifth step. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Hello, did you know that was in there? Did you know that was in there? You probably thought it was some sort of like when you see a psychiatrist, some sort of mental health thing, like this is a great psychiatric program. Did you know that the reason we do the fifth step is because what we've been trying to do is get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator and to discover the obstacles in your path to that relationship with your Creator? Did you know that? Now, if you didn't know that, okay, then you can do this until the cows come home. You ain't going to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. You're not going to experience much of heaven. You may stay sober, but you're going to be miserable. And I'm just telling you that, so 10 years down the road or 20 years down the road, when you're a thumbsucking crybaby and you've got 20 years sobriety, but you don't have the sobriety some people have, and you're trying to think it's AA's fault, you'll know exactly where to place the fault. You'll know exactly what's going on, because you're all big boys and girls, okay? We have now admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. Now what's the whole point? Just finish. The whole point is this. Part of this, what this thing does, what does this thing give you? What are you going to get out of this? What you're going to get out of this on the fifth step and the sixth step and putting your reliance on Him, this is what you're going to get out of it. You're going to get the new freedom. You're going to get rid of the voices. You know, you're going to listen to this. You're going to stop worrying. I know this sounds crazy, of what they think about you. You're going to be able to talk from the podium and speak your mind without worrying about whether some banana in the front row thinks you're stupid or laughs at you. What you think about yourself is not going to be dependent upon what other people think about you. Isn't that great? Isn't that worth it? Do you really want to go through your entire life doing things and acting and doing everything, worrying about if I do this, what will they think about me? If I do that, what will I, if I wear this, if I wear that? Wouldn't you like to be like your own person? Maybe you're kind of neat. You know, rather than live your life the way you think other people, a group of other people want you to live, you really want to be like a follower your entire life and worry about all that stuff and have that anxiety and all that? I mean, that feels good to you? You don't want that, do you? You want the real deal, right? So listen, don't blame me. I'm just reading. You know, listen, 90% of the stuff, I want to tell you something, 90% of the stuff I said to you came right out of this book. This is our basic text. It's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can think of nothing better at a step meeting than to talk about the big book and what's in the big book. And if all I do is highlight this thing so you look at it a little bit differently, so the next time you're in a meeting and you hear some guy bark at somebody for mentioning God, you'll know exactly what's going on. You won't think, well, that guy must be an old timer and he knows what he's talking about. You'll think that this is the problem. You're looking at the problem. So God bless you. We'll talk about step 6 next week.